Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. So good to hear your voices out there, and it seems like when we're doing these programs, it feels like we literally have your feedback and your voice coming through, especially when you're tweeting us, when you're blogging us, you're emailing us. I tell you, as you listen to this program today, please get on there, tweet us, hit the tweeter. David Lickin is the tweet address. You can also then email me at dlickin@mortgagebankingsolutions.com. MBS is the name of the company. But we'd love to hear from you, and we appreciate you passing this on to many others. So happy Monday to you all, and let's dive into the agenda. Joe and Scott, we've got you here with we're talking about rates. There's a lot going on there. It's actually, you know, there is a lot going on rates, Joe, and we got some exciting things to talk about.
Well, we're up again today. This movement on top of movement during the week last week, we're up about half a point in prices on a par rate, mortgage-backed security. So it's been a good few days. We're up today in spite of some better-than-expected economic information. The Chicago PMI came out a little better than expected, and so the market's not reacting as you'd normally expect it to, but the stock market's down and mortgage prices are up today. So it's starting out to be a good week. Last week was a week where we continued to receive some pretty good economic data, at least better than what people thought was going to come out. The consumer confidence was better than expected. Durable orders was better than expected. New home sales were better than expected. Usually you'd expect to see a negative reaction in the market to that data, but the nice offset to that was the inflation data that came out. The personal consumption expenditure measures came out with fairly tame inflation for the month, and so net we had a good week last week.
We saw the numbers. It was very encouraging. In fact, while I was up in Michigan, we did a Fox broadcast because of the data that's coming in. And, I mean, we've had how many quarters now? Is it four straight quarters of nonstop positive numbers? And out of the last seven quarters, five quarters have been up. So, I mean, it really strengthens the argument that we're really forming a bottom in the housing or in the home ownership housing sales, and so there's some encouraging signs. So the markets, how are the markets reacting? What's going on with the rates, and what can we? I know you're not going to predict rates, but what can we anticipate coming forward here in the next week or two?
Well, next week let's talk about this week first. I guess we have some pretty important news coming out. Of course, Chicago PMI came out today, and it was strong, or better. The ISM index comes out tomorrow. The Fed minutes have been market-moving events of late. They come out on Wednesday. And then Thursday, they announce another round of auctions. I believe it's the 3, 10, and 30 will come out next week. And then the big thing, as always, the jobs report will come out on Friday. And think about that being the most important event or economic announcement of the month, and it's going to come out on a shortened day as the markets close early in advance of a long weekend. So that could be a very, very volatile day.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. We've got to keep these interest rates low if we're going to keep this housing economy moving forward and keeping home sales moving forward. There's been some significant developments in the MBS markets. Let's get into that and discuss that for a bit here, Joe, if we could. I know we got the economic calendar. Maybe we should go to the economic calendar first and then go into the MBS, some of the MBS developments.
Well, the economic calendar for the week, it just went over, and it is going to be a very, very active week. And when you talk about keeping MBS prices low, you can kind of count a point to the Fed as being helpful in doing that, and that leads them to go ahead.
I got busted. I'm doing a post on LinkedIn here, trying with keeping everyone updated what's going on. We got some emails in, so I got busted. We talked about the calendar, and I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, we did discuss the calendar, but let's go into the MBS. Talk about the Feds and their appetite, Joe.
Fed President Lacker came out last week suggesting that it might not be necessary for the Fed to spend the full $1.25 trillion that they have allotted to buy agency mortgage-backed securities. And that was one of the first times to make that suggestion. This week, this morning, one of the other Fed presidents said, Dudley said, maybe too early to make that call. But it does raise a very sensitive question for the industry. And that question is, what happens at the end of the Fed's purchase program? Will it end? Will it end early, as Lacker is suggesting it might? Very, very difficult, I would think, for somebody to feel comfortable about hedging a pipeline if they don't know what's going to happen down the road. I know we're maybe just a little bit too far out for that to be much of an issue right now, but you'll recall.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you'll recall that as the initial $500 billion program was nearing an end, we saw mortgage rates start to rise. And it wasn't until they clarified in the, I think it was the March minutes of a Fed meeting, that they were going to expand the program to go out through the remainder of the year, that mortgage rates fell back. And so as we begin to near that point of uncertainty as to what's going to be happening in January, if the Fed's not in? What are rates going to do? It just makes for a very, very difficult time as a hedger when you're beginning to look at transactions that might run into that time frame. So if we don't get some clarity soon, I think the market's going to start reacting to the uncertainty by causing rates to go higher.
Well, and I think to your point, Joe, that we're bringing this up now, and yes, it is a little bit ahead of the discussion possibly, but it's important to draw people's attention to this, and so they start thinking about it, and that's really what our program is, the purpose of our program, is start drawing people's attention to issues that may not be in the front burner and are raging fire, but really should be considered and given serious consideration as we move closer to the issues at hand. But anything else that you have for us? There's so much we have talked about, as you well know, in the program. Is there anything else on the rate front that we should discuss? We want to come back and talk more in future programs about the Fed's appetite to participate in the purchasing of MBSs. But is there anything more you have right now?
No, that's pretty well it.
I just would say, Joe, I got a question for you. On the surface, you would think that sort of announcement, albeit from Lacker, who is somewhat of a renegade or kind of a contra Fed official, why didn't we have more of a reaction in the market? You would think that would be something fairly unsettling in the MBS market.
Yeah, it is a good question, Scott. And the uncertainty is always going to push rates higher. I just think it may be a little bit early in the discussion. We've still got 4 months of what should be $25 billion a week in purchases if they are going to spend all their money. And, the right now transactions entered into will be settled before, the major part of that announcement gets made. I do think, though, as we get closer to that point in time, it will begin to be considerable pressure to push rates higher without a clear answer.
Well, overall, we seem to be in the Fed's dream environment, and that is controlled growth absent inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Hence,
yep.
Rates are very stable.
And we need it to stay there, Scott. to keep this market going, don't we? So anyway, let's take a quick break, and we'll return to Licking on Lending right after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLand delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLand, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLand today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Hello, good to have you back. And I want to say thank you to Joe and Scott for their participation in the program. We get a lot of feedback. They love it. Joe, everyone loves your style. You know, you kind of sound like the consummate conservative mortgage banker that just kind of is fairly even about it, not the excitable type like me. I have spent so much time on the production side of it. And I tell you, getting excited is something we all can do if you consider what's coming down the line on a legislative basis. Alice, it was great with being up with you up there in, in the great state of Michigan and working with you last week in person. But let's give a quick legislative update on what is on the docket, what's on the calendar, as we look while we wrap up this recess.
Well, like you said, Dave, it was good to see you in Michigan as we worked together with a client. And the legislative update, you know, like we mentioned, the regulators are in recess right now back at home, some of them conducting their town hall meetings. So our quick update is we have about five bills that we're watching and we'll be reporting on as they get back in after September 8th and we start seeing some more action on this. So the numbers to watch, you know, we haven't lost sight of H.R. 1728. It's still out there. It was the original one with anti-predatory lending and mortgage reform in it that was going to get, you know, trying to attack that skin in the game where companies would have to retain 5% ownership in a loan, among many other things. So that one's still out there. The moratorium on the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, that's H.R. 3044, no action on that. Consumer Financial Protection Agency, there's a lot of talk about that one, but again, no action. So we can't really, we're not going to spend a ton of time on that yet, because more importantly is this proposed Reg Z rule for the Home Secure Credit. It was finally published August 24th. We have been talking about it on a couple of shows, and I know our hot topic after our next break is going to be to spend quite a bit of time to talk about the loan officer compensation of that aspect. So we're watching. The only other one is really will the in the Senate Bill 1230 and the idea of possibly increasing that home buyer tax credit from $8,000 up to $15,000 and allowing that it would be for that you wouldn't have to be a first time home buyer and get another year out of that. I think that would help our purchase markets too.
Yeah,
so all of this on hold at the moment.
Good stuff. Good. Yeah. That's good stuff, and we're looking forward to it. I think a lot of the folks are coming back from this recess. Many of the legislators had well-publicized town hall meetings. We've got ours coming up next week, and I can't wait to be diving into it and be attending there. But, man, there's been a lot of excitement all about the health care bill. But there is so much more to get worked up about when you look at the volume of bills and the rate at which they're coming at us. These are game-changing legislations that are going through that, if passed, will alter the way we are doing our business, the mortgage business, probably for the foreseeable future or until they get repealed. But, I mean, it's here. And then some of these, I'm not sure, will ever get repealed and changed. So it's so important that you listen and get involved. Alice, we thank you so much. We've got so much to talk about in the next segment that we really want to go there. But let's take a quick break. Come back and stay tuned to Lickin' on Lending. We've got more, and it's hot.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
As I hit the send button on a quick tweet here, get it out there. I mean, folks, I mean, an old guy like me, 59 years old, is using Twitter and all these things. It's pretty fun, but it's really amazing to me the feedback and the amount of people that are following us as a result of what we're discussing. And a lot of it, Alice, is because of what is the next topic that is coming out in the rules process. Let's get into it. Reg Z has been rewritten, substantially rewritten. Some provisions are good. But there's one component that is really bringing about a lot of fired up folks within our industry. A lot of folks are getting fired up over it. It has to do with loan officer compensation. And I wish you, all the listeners, could have listened in to our pre-program discussion just with us. But we're going to try to get as much of that brought forth in this discussion. Joe and Scott, jump into this. But, Alice, let's have you lead it off. Give us an update. Come on. This is interesting.
Well, I think, you know, we have just been trying to struggle with what if it's a blanket sentence, if this proposed rule goes through as it is written. Now, I'm still a believer in we've got plenty of time. We've got till December 24th to send in comments and make sure that as an industry we say, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way to make sure that the customer's best interests are looked out for. But the way it's phrased now is loan officer yield spread and overages would be done away with. Now, I read this to apply to any bank and lender, that it does simply say loan officer, and it includes those employed by banks. I've read some things on the Internet that might be referencing it just might be lenders and brokers, but I think overall you've got to ask yourself a lot of questions. How does this impact wholesale broker relationships? How does a lender impact it? So we've been talking to customers and getting some ideas. I know, Joe, you gave us a big list of random thoughts on this one.
Yeah, it can really change the environment. I mean, you look at broker compensation being limited only to what they can charge as an origination fee, and that origination fee maybe needs to be more than 1%, given that they'll no longer receive yield spread premium. So now they've got to put a 1% origination or 2% origination fee on the HUD-1, and how are they going to sell their customer that comparing to a loan officer that works for a lender who only has 1% origination fee? How's that broker going to sell the consumer on why his services are so much more valuable? It's going to be very difficult when it's on the face of it like that.
And for the listeners, Joe, I want to clarify, you know, when we say lender, we're talking about a mortgage banker. That working for a company that is selling into the secondary markets, because there is a very significant distinction, and there's repercussions out to the whole future of the wholesale channel. The future of the mortgage broker is really in the balance here as we consider the ramifications of these new rules.
No question.
Well, and you go all the way back to, you know, when I was a loan officer in the early 80s for a very short period of time, and the reason I stopped doing it because I only got paid half of the origination fee. I mean, that was it. There was no incentive based on rate. The origination fee was split 50-50 between the company and I, and that's the way loan officer compensation worked. And so it almost, here we go, back to the future again.
Yeah, it is. We keep using that expression, Alice, but I don't know that there's a better one. It is back to the future. The future is going back to the way it was, and we're seeing a lot of that. Scott, I know this is going to have an impact on all the loan officers that are working for you and many of the ones that are out there that you're talking to the industry. Your thoughts on all this?
Well, you know, if we start, it really just, you know, back to basics here. No company is originating a loan for a 1% revenue component, period. Not
That's
a big
right.
bank, not an intermediate lender, not a broker. And
right.
so at the end of the day, there are really a couple of people that are going to be disadvantaged here. You know, we can say loan officers and so on. That becomes a very personal thing in terms of how you're compensated. But the consumer, it's well documented that the number one barrier to home entry, home ownership, entering the home ownership market is cash. And YSP, as long as it's been attacked, has always had a really meaningful and valuable place in the origination arena. And that,
for the sake of our listeners, we need to remind everybody YSBP is yield spread premium. Sorry for interrupting. I try to keep.
And
when we use industry expressions, I jump in there and try to help our listener for those that are not familiar with these terms to kind of bring them up to speed. So I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no,
go ahead.
No problem. And so, you know, under this proposal, if, you know, as we understand it, if we understand it correctly, you know, the banks, the bigger lenders, will not have to disclose this other income that they will be earning on the transaction, the gain on sale, the aftermarket sale. The bank may have a rate of X and say a 1% origination fee, and there's additional income behind it because you just can't pay rent, pay underwriters, pay a loan officer, you know, all of the costs associated with running a business for 1%. The problem comes in for the brokers and for what may well be intermediate-sized lenders that they have those same expenses to deal with, but they're not going to have any way to realize that income absent collecting it from a consumer. And
that's
so
right.
If the consumer does not have the cash, then you're going to be back to who can do this loan, and it's going to be back to the big banks. And, you know, one of Joe's random thoughts is the big lenders are going to like this because it, you know, in theory is really going to drive some market share to them if, as it's proposed, it goes through.
And, Joe, maybe that is distinctly why we're not hearing some of the screams of protest is because this has probably got the single biggest impact on loan originators and their compensation. But I think a good number of mortgage broker companies are in jeopardy. Their future's in jeopardy. Their very existence is in jeopardy with this legislation because there is no way. We were talking about that earlier. There's no way you can pass on a revenue, a mortgage banker, a correspondent lender, a wholesale lender who is earning gain on sale can pass on any income beyond that which is just fully disclosed without running into a RESPA violation. And that's got penalties none of us can, that no one ever wants to cross. So the reality is that there is a very uneven playing field developing here and developing as of Christmas this year. What a Christmas gift.
Well, keep in mind that December 24th is just when the comment period expires. It'll take many months for them to go, you know, usually it takes at least a couple months to go through the comments, assuming, again, that we give them lots of comments, everybody out there. And you can go to the Federal Reserve Board. The link is up. It should be working now. And then you give your comments. It'll take them time to put the comments together to come up with their responses to all the comments and then a final draft of the final rule. So it's not actually that date. It'll be sometime after that. And then knowing the retooling that'll have to go on in the industry, they're going to have to give us a big window to work with to adjust to this.
That's an important update. That's a distinction that I'm not sure that I had in my mind. So let's go through that. There's the review process, 120-day comment period. They then assemble all the comments and digest them is what you're saying.
Right.
And then they come up with a final ruling. But Alice, with the pressure that is this administration is putting on changing our industry, I'm really concerned that they're not going to compress that time frame, or that the folks at HUD who are publishing these rules are actually going to be in a situation where they're going to have to race these things through. Is it distinctly possible that we could see this happen rather quickly?
Yeah, that has happened before where they've gone through a lot of the comments. That you have different ends of the spectrum. We had remember the down payment assistance programs for FHA where you had Nehemiah and AmeriDream? Well, one of the first pieces of proposed rule that came out from FHA to do away with those, they got bombarded with, I forget the number, with a couple thousand comments. That alone had them shelve it until they had to reword things, you know, for FHA, just as an example on how comments can slow it down. Then you have other times they don't get a lot of comments, they go through them quickly, or they disagree with all the comments, no one has a valid response, and then it can happen very quickly. So you have both ends of the spectrum. It really, now is the time to set what that course may be.
Well, I think there's several messages we're getting out of this that I'm hearing out of this, Alice, and correct me if I'm wrong, but number one, making comment is critical. If you do not like what you're hearing, what's coming forth, you got to make comment. And the more comments that go into them, the greater probability that, you know, this could be delayed or that there could be an impact, favorable for the loan officers that are going to be greatly impacted by this. But it is distinctly possible, on the other hand, that this being a branch of the federal government, and because we need to get, quote-unquote, we need to do something about this mortgage industry that's been out of control, that's the view of many regulators, they're going to push this through rather suddenly. So I don't think we should quickly assume or get into any kind of form of complacency and not do something about this. And so, number one, I know there's a lot of you dialing in just to listen to this part of the program. I mean, the rates are important. You need to know what's going on. But many of you, the catalyst for you to dial and listen to this broadcast was this single topic. And so number one stress is get out, get familiar with that website, and start putting in the comments. Alice, are those comments put in the website? How should people comment?
There's several ways. Actually, and I apologize, I don't have if you go to the Federal Reserve website, they have a place where you can comment online. You can actually even email them. And in the very first page of the rule itself, of the proposed rule, if you look, behind the first page cover, it lists the three or four different ways and websites you can comment, and you can certainly just put something in writing and mail it to the Federal Reserve Board. They're the entity collecting the comments. A big point here, I think, is to think of real legitimate comments. Scott, you touched on one, consumer, ways that it can negatively impact the consumer. I think execution is another important aspect on the comment side. How do you enforce this? Will lenders have to go so conservative that we end up with three rates on a price sheet? You've got your zero, your 1 point, and here's your zero cost, but then you still have to have a dollar amount of what is a zero cost loan. Does a zero cost loan mean $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 in closing costs? Everything's going to have to be set, and not every company has the same costs and overhead to equate to a zero cost. So the whole idea of how do you execute this could be that you can't, and how enforceable is it?
Well, that's a good point. This is a point when the commentary period is get them to think about it and then raise these very issues. And I think when you made a point on another program, one of our previous programs, Alice, I thought was so good I listened to and I want to bring out and reiterate in this program, and that is this. If you just sound emotional about that and do that, that's they're going to just blow those comments off. The more factual, the more specific you can be in your comments back to the feds, the better off you're going to be in having those comments taken more seriously.
Yeah, we've had some companies, some people just really whine and complain, you can't do this, this is my livelihood. They don't want to hear that. But they certainly want to hear consumer impact. Pricing options aren't going away. And I don't know, Joe, I seem to remember, wasn't there a period in time where some of the subprime was only par rates and they always had to charge fees up front in order to gain income?
Yeah, and there are several other things that I think will be a negative impact to the industry from a consumer perspective, and that's going to be, it would appear to me, there'll be many fewer options to go to. I think that there'll be a lot of people that may get out of the business if they're unable to make a profit, like Scott said, if they're unable to collect the revenue necessary per loan to pay for the back office and the utilities. We may wind up with just that view of very few, very large lenders, and even from that point, it might be that the lenders choose to compensate loan officers other than on commission, and then now you're dealing with somebody who's lost a lot of motivation to get your deal done, to help you, to be an advocate for you. It can really change the consumers. The landscape of where they can go and what kind of experience they have.
Joe, our listeners are so interested in this discussion. I'm getting a lot of emails and some great tweets here coming in from them. One of the things they're focusing in on is number one, I see a lot of comments coming in about how to comment. I think we've addressed most of that. But it is, one of these questions is, I'm a mortgage broker. Am I dead? And that is a real concern that's in the back of everyone's mind. Are mortgage brokers going to survive out of this? And we had a great discussion on that before the program. Let's kind of go back into that discussion a bit for the benefit of our listeners. There is a decided advantage if you are a lender in this new rule. Is it not?
In that you don't have to disclose all your revenue on the HUD-1.
Yes.
That's the advantage. And so the question becomes, can the maybe with some of the improvement in the disclosures on the truth in lending, it will become easier to see equal or to compare the overall APRs of each deal. But, if you're having to show revenues on to yourself on one HUD-1 versus revenues to yourself on, at a much lower rate on another, it would appear to be the consumer would view the lower revenues, the lower fee HUD-1 as the better option.
But if you have pricing, if you say in a world of pricing, wholesale pricing in theory should be better than retail pricing. And so, therefore, does it give a well-run broker with low overhead, and maybe that has to be smaller companies? Is there, when somebody says, "Am I dead?" There may be a lot of them that are, but is there any model that can work in this? If you envision that there truly is a spread between wholesale and retail pricing, and therefore that gives the broker some room to work with to get some additional fee income.
I agree. The broker took 70% of originations by being close to the consumer by having low cost, and that's all still very capable. It's still an opportunity going forward.
We need to preserve this channel, and many of us have believed in the brokers, and there's many brokers listening to this program, but the reality is they're at a decided disadvantage if these rules go through as proposed. The way they can receive compensation is really being limited because they have to disclose it, whereas a lender can receive income in the secondary side of the transaction, the gain on sales side of the transaction, and be in a place where that revenue is not having to be disclosed. And just that one factor is creating, again, the uneven playing field, and I wonder if not a greater number of these companies are not going to want to make that transition. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lickin' on Lending and this very
important
topic.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions. Enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. There's a lot on this topic, and we're just really getting into it. We're going to be continuing with this topic for a period of time, and I'm excited to, again, be joined by Alice Alvey of Mortgage, President of Mortgage U, one of the preeminent training companies and firms, as you heard in the brief spot that we have on them. Alice, let's get into the uneven playing field component of this. We were talking about that before the program. Is there any way a broker that you could see a broker can get around the RESPA deal and receive revenue, receive compensation if this regulation goes through?
I think we've all been kind of sitting around the table going, okay, how do you make this work? And I think you have a lot of challenges. And for a lot of shops, if they lived by yield, by high yield on interest rates, they're going to have some challenges. And, like we've been talking about here, there's now a flat fee structure that has to be able to work. and you have to look at where your business is coming from. Joe, you brought up a great point, or maybe it was Scott, about face-to-face, that there's a component of this that really does offer a lot of advantages for that face-to-face customer contact. That's really becoming an advantage. You have to gear up for the fact that the banks are already making changes for this. A lot of places see this, like management level, opportunities to go, hey, you know what, those were some high-priced people, and I'm going to stay quiet because if this goes past, it really does lower my overhead quite substantially, and I can say it's not my fault. So there's some downside even on the banking. It's not just the brokers.
I think that's a real strong argument. Allison, I think that's why we probably are not seeing as much protesting on this. Loan officers, if you're listening, get on. You should organize yourselves and get out there. Scott, we were talking earlier before the program with Joe about, you know, banks are going to have, or banks or mortgage lenders, anyone who's in the mortgage banking process, selling in the secondary markets, you know, do have an advantage there, but they too are going to have to be compliant to what, you know, the originators are paid. It's just that they have the other revenue stream that is not being disclosed and will not ever be required to be disclosed. Your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I go back to the write in the question, am I dead? I mean, first of all, my answer would be absolutely not. Changes in the air, what that change is going to look like, we're going to find out. But if you remove this from the mortgage industry, it doesn't matter what business you're in, good, competent, successful people command a higher price, period.
Yes.
You get more promotions, you have more responsibility, whatever the case may be. Now, bringing it back to the mortgage industry, many times we see clients come through looking to refinance, and they've been to their servicer, let's say, without naming a name, through the 800 number. It's been a 90-day process. They're speaking with a clerk, and these are less well-trained,
yeah,
mortgage employees, let's say.
Yep.
And, you know, presumably less compensated, whereas the alternative on the street would be a loan officer that is knowledgeable and his living depends on this. And my point with all of that being, back to the consumer being disadvantaged, if in fact all of this is internalized and the major lenders are the ones that can get these gains and then basically commoditize, is the word that Joe has used, this whole process, the consumer will be disadvantaged. There is absolutely no question. Because we saw this in January and February, and listeners can chime in about this, when rates dropped down into the 4% range and refinancing was all the craze and all the cocktail party talk, you could not get through to a servicer. And you add on to that the modification program that lenders couldn't take care of, consumers were really disadvantaged, just simply,
yeah,
could not execute on the rates that were available out there.
Well, it's the difference between calling into a call center where no one's incentivized to really do anything, and that's what it's like to call into a lot of these loan servicing companies and try to get a resolution if you're delinquent or you're fearing being delinquent, or even just if you're working on taxes and trying to find out what's going on. You know, you get this whole, well, you know what, that's what I can do, I'll transfer you to a supervisor. Rather, when you have a highly compensated loan officer and that takes his job seriously and is going to receive a direct remuneration for the taking care of and solving this problem that you have, there's a whole different response rate. And so I think this is something that needs to be just really thought through carefully. The unintended consequences is something we keep saying, keeps coming up. And my concern is, yeah, we're going to solve one problem. We're going to really, unfortunately, can kill or hurt the consumer being really given good quality professional advice. Now, again,
well, I think that's a huge point. The expert. Are we going to lose some experts in this industry as a result of it? Because you now say, like you said, they've had to commoditize it. It's not just potentially the clerk at the company. It could be you walk into your local bank and maybe it's just a non-mortgage person who's trying to explain to you the complexity. I mean, even if it is just three or four rates to pick from, you still got to understand how the costs relate to interest rate and understand the product, and that takes an expert.
That's that service factor that when you're digesting this, I mean, getting a mortgage loan is still one of the most complicated transactions, most certainly one of the most important transactions. In most people, 95, 99% of the people across America, that's the most important, biggest transaction they have going. And for someone that is not compensated in some way, shape, or form to make sure they get the best program, then they're trouble. Now, on the other side of the coin, the reason we have this out there is because as an industry, we watched consumers get pushed into programs that, quite frankly, weren't in their best interest. Joe, how do you respond to that?
Not
so fast either.
No, the sales guy, yeah, the incentives were maybe too much in favor of making overage on loans. No question about that. And there can be some pull back without going too far the other way. And the incentives, it's kind of like if you walk into a Mercedes dealership and he's going to sell you a Mercedes, even though you might not really be able to afford it. I have a little bit of a problem with somebody overriding a salesman's ability to sell.
That's really what we're talking about here. That is the heart of the issue.
Well, I think it's an ethics conflict. You know, you got to make sure if you have good ethical loan officers who are out there looking out for the best interest of the customer, then that's one thing. But unfortunately, we've had a large group that only cared about their own paycheck and did not put the ethics of the transaction first and what was right for the consumer. We still have people getting approved for loans that they can't afford by automated underwriting systems. So,
there's
two sides to this. It's not just about rate. It's the products, and it takes an education, it takes an expert to make sure the customer still ends up with what they can afford.
Well, let's just pretend that we all of a sudden had Barney Frank and Senator Dodd and Representative Frank on the phone. They're dialing in, and they were discussing this with us. I mean, and you almost have to take on that kind of discussion in your mind, because that's who we're fighting against is, those that are out there to, quote-unquote, protect the consumer. And they'll argue, I mean, I've listened to them, I had an opportunity to meet with some of them when I was back there recently, is they're arguing the fact is, well, you know what, you guys really screwed the customer over and the consumer over in this last cycle. You had all this opportunity, and look what you did. Alice, you said a lot of them did focus on what they could make more on that. I wonder about that as really the majority of folks. I think the majority of loan officers really tried to get people into loans. What was interesting to me is that, as I was thinking about this, is that more consumers were saying, this mortgage banking process is an arduous process. You got to verify my employment. You got to verify all this cash I have. And I know you got to get an appraisal, and of course you're going to want to get a credit report, but isn't there a quicker way through this? And remember, Alice, when we had all those backed up pipelines in 2003 and 2004, a lot of consumers said, isn't there a program we could just like get done fast? And
right.
here's what happened. A lot of the consumers said, or the loan officer says, well, you know, we have this no point, no fee, no qual loan, the NINA loan, no income, no asset,
no verification loan.
It's a slightly higher rate. It has some other features about this that are higher risk. And consumers, as much as the loan officer, are saying, give me that. I want that because I got to get this deal done. Is that a valid argument?
No, I think you got to be careful with that one because there's a big chunk of customers. And you got to remember, customers have spoken very loudly on they weren't told about all those nuances of those products. So, you know, are those products right if they're in a fully informed consumer's hand and the customer understands the consequences? Yes, but unfortunately, the voice that gets heard is a lot of the consumers who feel they weren't told that aspect of the product.
Yeah, there's no question that consumers that may have been had some of this explained either didn't understand it or, suffer from what I suffer from is a short-term memory issue, and they fail to remember those components when things started going south and the adjustment started happening on them.
Right. You didn't tell me that. Well, here are the four pieces of paper that I gave you, and by the way, we've got new laws that we have to give you more paper, and you have to have that paper for 7 days now, so... Yeah, I'm not so sure if putting more paper in front of them is actually helping, but if we take the time to explain the paper, maybe it'll work.
Well, so long as they're not suffering from a long-term or short-term memory loss or even long-term memory loss in some of the cases. Let's go talk about, we're getting some emails in from mortgage bankers saying, Dave, could you guys discuss briefly on the program today about how this is going to affect me. I'm a mortgage banker. One individual saying, I'm a mortgage banker. We don't have a tendency to offer a lot of rebates. Is this going to cause us to have to come up with one rate on one rate sheet? Your thoughts, Alice?
Well, I think, again, if this passes and you, this proposed rule, you know, passes as it's written now, you can't pay overage. So if you're a banker, you'll now have to figure out how to compensate salespeople when, you know, you've got the gain on sale, your loan officers know that. How do you come up with some plan in being able to kind of share the revenue or share the profits with them without it being based on the interest rate or the terms of the loan? So, you know, that's the challenge here, is to start thinking about that. We've talked with a few companies. They're already trying to, you know, scratch some ideas down on pencil. You can certainly – the Fed does not want to do with offering the customer a no-cost option. So it's not just one rate, but it's certainly not a, you know, a rate that's yielding overage or yield, but it's here are the extra dollars that go with this rate in order to apply back to the good faith estimate charges.
Yeah, well, Joe, you brought it doesn't affect the rate sheet at all. I think it just affects what the loan officer's compensation can consist of. And, you know, it'll be, I think Alice mentioned it earlier, it's going to be easy for institutions to say you're going to get 75 basis points on the loan balance and nothing more. Maybe if they have a shortage, they'll have to participate in a shortage. But the easy thing for an entity to do is just to establish that kind of compensation structure. There's no other compensation to be paid, and that makes it very auditable, makes it very easy for them to be in compliance.
But
that
Joe,
doesn't affect
that?
The rate sheet. Oh, it's just on your compensation worksheets. It'll be loan amount times 50 or 75 or whatever the agreed upon percentage of compensation is, and so for every loan you close, it's a very easy calculation. That's what you get paid.
I guess
so,
my
Joe,
question is, if they're getting
the
regular rate sheet, you know, so like in today's world, someone's getting a wholesale price rate sheet. If you're at a shop that allows some, you know, some warehouse line use, because warehouse lines are limited, so it's not, you know, you got a lot of shops that are half and half, or some using their own line and some still brokering product, they get that straight rate sheet. I don't see how they can continue to, as a manager of pricing, how I could still have the loan officer in control of selecting that price and then still maintain what that there was no compensation to yield. So, you know, you're just talking some systems I'd have to develop. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, see, I read this rule as taking away the incentive to charge the borrower for a higher rate than the lowest rate they can qualify for.
And you're
and
right.
That would include
that
would include whatever cost they want to generate to be offset by taking a higher rate. So you're just removing the incentive by saying you're not going to be compensated for anything more than this. A company can choose to post a rate that generates a three-quarters point profit, or they can choose to post a price for a rate that generates a point profit. That's totally up to the company. But the loan officer's incentive is being removed.
So I go back to the consumer issue and being disadvantaged. And if Mr. Jones and Mr. Smith come in and want to borrow $200,000, and Mr. Jones has a W-2 and 20% down, and it's a very easy deal, and you know, I as a businessman originator say, yes, I can do that loan for this price because I won't spend a lot of time on it. Flip side of that is Mr. Smith comes in and says, I have a couple of credit issues. I think I might have to pay some things off. Need your help getting my credit squared away. And by the way, I have two companies, and I haven't filed a tax return on one. And I have to get a P&L.
And it's Monday morning.
K-1. And I look at that and
I
say, okay, I'm working for a flat fee irrespective of which loan I work on. I think Mr. Jones gets my attention. So
you know what?
Definitely
that
some issues.
Is, That is a huge point. I mean, there's, you know, the complexity of, you know, a salaried individual that's been working on the same job for, you know, 5, 10, 15 or more years versus the guy that's the entrepreneur. Scott, you and I definitely can have all of us on the call are entrepreneurs in this thing. Our tax returns and our situation are a little bit more complicated. And you're right. I mean, are we going to draw in and get their interest? That is such a good point. As you lay out that scenario, it really becomes much clearer. So
don't you add the component of being able to then separate for different rates because not everyone's got the same credit score. They don't have all the same credit components. So there's another argument for variable pricing still being out there.
Well, I think also, are you proposing, Joe, that, or are you seeing it be where there'll be like a 70, let's say you get paid 75 basis points for a commission or whatever the agreed upon compensation is, regardless of rate. Are you saying that, and this is, the emails are flying in on this, so we're dwelling on this for a few more minutes. How should the question keeps, the center of the question or the general question is, how should I structure a rate sheet if this all goes through? Are they saying, can I have a rate that's a higher rate or a lower rate that shows a 2% loan origination fee, of which the loan officers only get 75 basis points, and then we're going to have a higher rate where there's no points, no fees. In other words, still allowing for no point, no fee loans, and it's just understood, if you're going to go with a no point, no fee loan, you're going to be paying a higher rate, but it doesn't matter. The loan originator is still getting paid his one compensation, thus removing the incentive. That's what I'm hearing you say. Is that correct?
I believe that's the end result of what the Fed would like to see. They want to remove any incentive from the originator to try to sell a higher rate or to try to propose and to collect more fee. Anything that the loan originator is doing that would cost the consumer more than the company policy, i.e. overage, is to be removed. It doesn't say that you shouldn't be able to get a higher rate and use the premium to pay for the cost. Whatever profit margin you choose to put into your price is what the salespeople are going to sell. But quite frankly, they're going to go to the company that's offering the best price because
exactly
it's an easier
right.
sell.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of questions were flying at us. They're coming in over the internet today at us while we're discussing this and saying, does this mean I have to only offer one rate? How do we do no cost? So that really addresses it. They're going to still be able to do no cost, no fee loans or something close to that. And for those that are willing to pay the fees, aren't going to be able to get a lower rate. But it's all based on loan officer compensation, which is really the gist of what we're talking about. Next week, we're going to get into a little bit about H.R. 1728. Alice, if you could kind of bone up on that a little bit, because that comes back to the skin in the game, and we have not addressed that. That is another interesting regulation that's being proposed that's flowing through the House. In fact, it's out of the House, and it's in the Senate. Am I correct on that, Alice?
Yes, that's correct. It did pass the House, and so it's further along than many of the other bills we're discussing, and it is in a Senate committee. So we'll find out once the schedule gets posted when that next Senate committee meeting may be and try and find out what happens at it.
It is important to say that this is not the only issue that could impact the loan officer compensation and what's going on, their future in this. Again, we're not trying to make this sound like it's, you know, the end of the world as far as their base as it relates to loan officers and brokers, but certainly there is some things that are going to be game changers in the way we go about it. And so I encourage you to continue to listen in to the program as we digest this as best we can. Sometimes it gives us indigestion as we're trying to digest this, but we welcome you to be a part of the program. Forward these links on. Go to Blog Talk Radio. For those of you that are listening on the phone, go to Blog Talk Radio and at the search window put Licking on Lending. Again, it's got spaces in there. It's not like the internet where you cram it all together. So put Licking space on space lending and look at the schedule of the programs. We'll also be creating a website here in the near future that you'll be able to go to. A lot of resources that we discuss on the program will be available. We welcome your feedback. It's so important that we hear from you. A lot of this is the content of what we're talking about here is driven by you, the listeners. So the more you come back to us and let us know, we appreciate it. Alice, as we get ready to wrap up the program, you got any parting thoughts for us?
No, just, you know, get your comments in. And like we're trying to help people right now, we're just in a stage of trying to get through what are the ideas for compensation going forward.
Joe?
No, I would say, you know, as we approach the subject of the House bill, that there's some very onerous things in there, but one of the other proposals from the Obama administration was to pay compensation over the performance of a loan, over the life of a loan. And as bad as all this sounds, that's worse.
Yeah.
So let's hope we don't get there.
Yeah, let's hope we don't get there. Scott?
I have some good news.
Yay,
MBS prices
yay!
Are
yay!
MBS prices are up 10-30 seconds, so originators out there, you ought to be seeing some better pricing soon.
That is good.
All
thank
right,
you
Scott.
For helping us end that up on an up note. Again, we thank you all for listening and tuning into this. I want to say a special thank you to our producer, Andy Alvey, for helping this sound, us non-professional radio talk show folks, make this sound professional. We thank you so much, Andy, for what you're doing. And dial in, pass this on to others, email them the link. We're excited to have you listen in and tune in. Have a great week, everyone.
Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.